say that. That's true. He does say that, too.
Ready. Good. First thing we're going to do today is do some organizational work. So I'm going to gavel in an organizational hearing. And the purpose of this is to go ahead and adopt our committee rules. For returning members, you'll recognize these rules are the same that we used last for previous sessions in this committee. And for folks that were in the Economic Development and Trade Committee this morning, you'll find that these are similar. Does anybody have any questions or comments about the rules?
Mr. Chair, I apologize. I am trying to open the meeting materials section of our agenda, and I can't get it open. It's getting an error message. I'm assuming these rules are identical to the rules of other substantive committees.
That's my understanding, Representative.
Okay. Thank you. But it seems to be an error in OLIS.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I can send down a note to IS letting them know there's a problem.
I'm getting the same message.
Yeah.
Oh, send them a note right now.
Maybe I broke it when I opened them 5 minutes ago.
It's the new computer. No.
Mr. Chair, I don't need to reread the rules if they're the standard rules.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does anybody else have any concerns about seeing the rules before we adopt them? Okay. Very good. Then I'd entertain a motion.
Chair Helm, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 1, 2017.
Rep. Powers moves to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 1, 2017. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, the motion passes and the rules are adopted.
Is there any objection?
Any objections? Seeing none, the rules are adopted. Okay. At this time, I want to accommodate Representative Kenny Geyer, who is testifying on House Bill 2725. So we're going to just jump ahead for a couple of minutes, allow that testimony, and then we will go back to our introductory comments from committee members and go into the rest of the agenda. So I first need to open a public hearing on both House Bill 2124 and House Bill 2725. Representative Kenny Geyer, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chair Helm, Vice Chairs Johnson and Power, members of the committee. I'm Representative Alyssa Kenny Geyer from House District 46, parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland. Really delighted to see the three new members of the legislature on this committee. I served on this committee 5 years ago, and I think Representative Bentz was the only continuing member from that time. My background is in public health, and I've worked on several bills since being in the legislature to reduce air pollution and the health and to address the health and economic impacts of pollution. When I first worked on a crematorium bill several years ago, and then later on industrial air toxics, Palmer Mason of the DEQ reminded me that wood smoke and diesel are actually the largest air pollutants in Oregon, and that is why I'm honored to co-chief sponsor House Bill 2725. I'll be brief because I'm supposed to be in the Health Committee right now, so thank you for letting me go first. I need to scoot back there, but I do want to thank Oregon Nurses Association for addressing the public health concerns that I had intended to address. They will go into more detail about that. In 2015, Representative Johnson's House Bill 3068 directed DEQ to organize a work group to evaluate and recommend strategies to reduce wood smoke pollution in Oregon. Their report, which you'll be hearing, recommends reoccurring state funding to support wood stove replacement at the local level. Uncertified wood stoves, manufactured before 1986, emit up to 70% more particulate matter and 25% more benzene than newer certified wood stoves. Replacing an older wood stove can range from $3,000 to $5,000, which is challenging for low-income families. The size of the problem is also daunting. DEQ estimates that approximately 150,000 uncertified wood stoves exist in Oregon, and it's staggering to think of the full cost for that replacement. House Bill 2725 attempts to target our limited public dollars effectively to help communities replace older stoves. The bill would direct DEQ to competitively select the best local programs offering rebates for wood stove replacement. DEQ must prioritize funding based on a tiered system that considers whether a community has been deemed non-attainment, and also factors such as the percentage of low-income residents, local match, and geographic diversity. House Bill 2725 creates a program that targets limited state funding to those communities and local programs with the highest need. It'll help those Oregon residents at greatest risk from wood smoke and those communities most likely to face regulatory constraints on business expansion. While it will take funding, it will also result in savings in healthcare costs, and it could allow businesses to expand in areas where they have not been able to because of the caps on air particulates. And because you opened a session on House Bill 2124 as well, I do want to say I'm supportive of that. I think they're complementary. That bill, which you will hear about, basically takes an existing funding program and allows it to be permissible to fund the wood stove replacement program. And so that's fine, but the purpose of this particular bill is to actually, it details the program under which that, how that would roll out. So I just wanted to differentiate those two house bills. Okay. Are there any questions?
Yeah. Do you have time for questions?
I do have time for questions.
Are there questions from committee members? Very good. Well, thank you.
And I do want to thank Representative Johnson for getting this conversation going, being a part of it, and I know he's going to be very involved in figuring out the path forward, whether it's these paths or others. So I really want to thank you for your work on this.
Thank you very much. And at this time, I'm going to recess the public hearing so that we can return to our agenda. But we'll get back to that, so stay tuned. Before we go any further with our hearing, I wanted to give members of the committee a chance to introduce yourselves and make any statement that you'd like to make about your hopes for the work that we're going to be doing. Just so as an introductory matter, I'm really thrilled with the composition of our committee, and I've had a chance to talk with most of you individually so far about your goals and what you'd like to accomplish, and I think we'll be able to do a lot of good things this session. And I also very much appreciate that you're all here on time. I think both the public appreciate starting on time, and I do, and since this is an afternoon hearing, if we start on time, we can end on time or end early and get everybody on their way to the rest of their day. So I appreciate that very much. So why don't I start, Werner, why don't I start with you?
Sure. My name is Werner Reschke, and I represent Southern Klamath Falls and Southern Lake County. I'm new, and I'm excited to be here in energy and environment. Energy is, a key economic factor in Oregon to bring. We have a strategic advantage in Oregon with energy. And coupled with that would be the environment. So it's weighing those two, and I'm excited to be part of that conversation.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. My name is Phil Barnhart. I represent House District 11, which includes portions of Lane and Linn counties, including the University of Oregon and Lane Community College, a lot of woodlots, agricultural land, a sheep country, and many, many small towns that are wonderful parts of our state. My interest in this area stems from the issues having to do with health and pollution, water difficulties and problems, and the ongoing issue that we have worldwide with figuring out how we're going to reduce greenhouse gas emissions before even more significant changes occur in our ecosystem. This morning, I heard from the Oregon Global Warming Commission that the transportation emissions for global for greenhouse gases are on the rise again, and that would tend to work, fit right in with my interest in electrifying transportation. But the mantra is electrify everything and then clean up the grid. I know we're also going to be working on water law and a variety of other topics.
Can I add a comment to his comments, Mr. Chair? I would say that the Global Warming Commission report would seem to point the point us towards a transportation package, which might alleviate some of that congestion and carbon emissions that come from vehicles that are sitting parked on I-5 or 84. I'm Mark Johnson from Hood River. I represent House District 52. This is actually my third session on this committee, so I've enjoyed that. And look forward to continue to be involved in crafting and building on some of the policies that we've done in the past, some very rational and reasonable and sensible solutions to keep moving our state forward and for all of us to be stewards of the resources that we have. So appreciate being here with me, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Happy to have you as the Vice Chair. Powers.
Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Power. I'm also a new representative. I represent House District 41. That's Milwaukee, Oak Grove, parts of Southeast Portland. I'm from Milwaukee. A little bit about my background. I'm an environmental lawyer by trade, and my day job when I'm not going to be here with you folks is working for a Oregon-based nonprofit that does large-scale cooperative restoration projects, largely on agricultural land, to meet regulated entities and others' compliance obligations. So I bring that kind of background. I'm excited to be here.
Cool. Representative Benz.
I'm State Representative Cliff Benz, ninth year on this committee. My district is House District 60, which is Burns, Lakeview, part of Lakeview, Ontario, John Day, Baker City. I think my district enjoys the largest amount of environment in this state, just guessing, since it's three times bigger than the next one in size. The my goal in this committee this time around is to hopefully continue to participate in discussions regarding energy, and of course, since I practiced water law for 3 years, I'll be interested in water-related discussions. And then all of the issues we discuss here in one way or another affect my district. So I'm very very happy to still be on this committee.
State Representative Paul Holvey for House District 8, South Eugene and South Central Lane County, and I share an interest in energy and environment issues.
Short and sweet there, Representative. I'm Representative David Brock Smith. I represent House District 1, so the beautiful fish farm and forestry area of Southwest Oregon.
Great
job. Represent Curry, Coos, Douglas, and Josephine counties. Very interested. I come from a local government background, former Curry County Commissioner and City Councilor, school board member, and look forward to working with these talented and great individuals on moving things forward responsibly for Oregon. So thank you.
And I'm Ken Helm, of course. My district is District 34. It's the north part of Beaverton. Heavily residential district, just outside Portland proper. Nike is headquarters is in the middle of my district, and my district is populated with a lot of families that have at least one member working in high tech. I'm a land use lawyer by trade, and I have dabbled in water law and environmental law for the last 20 years, so I'm anxious to use those skills in this new role. I thought I would just briefly summarize some of the issue areas that I know that we'll be working on for sure. And committee members have already talked about work on climate change response in one way or another. The Senate and the House will be working aggressively on those issues this session. So expect a lot of that in this committee. We also will be initiating the first part of the work to restructure Oregon's Department of Energy, coming out of work that was done in the task force this summer that Representative Holby served on. That's important work. We will have some water bills that attempt to get at how we modernize our water systems and better account for what we use in all parts of the state. There'll be some electric vehicle-oriented bills. In fact, those are coming up in the near future on our agenda to attempt to get at what Representative Barnhart talked about, taking advantage of the other legislation that we passed in the last few years that encourages folks to use electric vehicles and encourages our utilities to provide infrastructure for charging those vehicles. We'll be doing some of that. And then we'll be working on energy efficiency from at least one perspective, and that is seeing how we can accelerate advancement in the energy efficiency components of our residential and commercial building codes. And the governor's offices are also working on that. I anticipate working in parallel and complementary to them and seeing where we can get on that front. With that, I think that we can move on in our agenda. Thank you all for your introductory comments. Appreciate them. Today, we have on our agenda a possible work session for the introduction of committee measures, but there are none today. I anticipate that there will be a few bills next week that we will consider as committee bills, so stay tuned there. So to get us started off on the subject of wood smoke in the state, I want to open an informational hearing and ask Palmer Mason and Rachel Sakata to come up and give us once again, I think we've heard this a couple of times, but for the benefit at least of our new members and for folks that are slow on the uptake like me, a review of the Wood Smoke Task Force and report. Thank you.
Chair Helm, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm the senior legislative advisor at the Department of Environmental Quality. Thank you for having us here to talk about wood smoke. It was mentioned earlier that Representative Johnson carried a bill in the 2015 session, that was House Bill 3068, that called or directed DEQ to put together a work group and develop a set of recommendations and deliver those to the legislature. That was done last September. I want to say a couple of things. First, an acknowledgement to Representative Johnson's leadership on the issue. It's appreciated. At the department, we see wood smoke as one of the more significant sources of air pollution and air toxics in the state. So we were grateful to see the legislature step up and start that conversation. And then I'll also add about the work group process. I think it came together as a good group. It was balanced among local government, industry, environmental perspectives. I think they gave serious thought to the issue and gave us a pretty solid set of draft recommendations for the department to consider, and Rachel will go into those in more detail. So I feel like the process has gotten off to a good start, and we're encouraged by the conversation in 2017. So thank you.
Great. Good afternoon, Chair Helm and members of the committee. My name is Rachel Sakata, and I'm an air quality planner at DEQ, and I'm the key staff person who led the wood smoke work group. So I know for some of you have heard this before, but I'll just reiterate it again. Wood smoke is a problem in many communities across Oregon as they struggle to meet federal health standards for particulate matter, or PM2.5. Now, particulate matter in wood stove smoke can be easily inhaled and reach the deepest part of our lungs and is known to cause or contribute to respiratory disease, asthma, and heart attacks, and premature death. And also, wood smoke, as Palmer mentioned, contains toxic organic compounds known to cause cancer. So overall, wintertime residential wood burning is the most significant source of particulate matter in most communities in or on the verge of what's called non-attainment. So
So what does non-attainment mean? It basically means that the area is violating the federal health standard for air pollutants. Now, Oregon has had a long history of addressing non-attainment in communities. Back in the 1980s, we had a number of areas violating the standards for particulate matter, or PM, and DEQ was able to work with these communities to bring them back into compliance. Now, we're still challenged because over the years, EPA has made the particulate matter health standard progressively more protective for public health. And as you can see from the graph there, the standard has been lowered successively. And with the latest revision in 2006, it was lowered almost by half, down to 35 micrograms per meter cubed. And so it's made it more difficult for past non-attainment communities to stay in compliance, and it has put new areas at risk of non-attainment. And you can see from the map here which communities are violating or at risk. And we've got Oak Ridge and Klamath Falls because those are currently areas that are non-attainment. They're violating the federal health standard. But then we have a number of other communities that are former non-attainment areas and those that are areas of concern because their levels are getting close to the standard. So across Oregon, the high PM2.5 levels driving the non-attainment risk are universally caused by wood stove smoke. So because of the growing concern about the health and economic effect of wood smoke in communities across Oregon, Representative Johnson sponsored House Bill 3068 during the 2015 session. And the bill directed DEQ to conduct a study to develop recommendations for legislation to reduce wood stove smoke in Oregon, particularly in communities where attainment of the national air quality standard is a concern. And the bill also directed DEQ to explore options for switching out old wood stoves for cleaner burning devices, to look into the use and production of biomass fuel, and to explore options for reducing the cost of wood stove alternatives during poor air quality days. So as mentioned earlier, DEQ formed a work group to help conduct the study and develop recommendations. And the work group members reflect a range of stakeholders affected by wood stove smoke and biomass, including those from rural and urban communities. And we actually have a few members of the work group here in the audience here today. And we held 5 work group meetings. And in the middle of the process, we conducted a roadshow around the state to solicit feedback and hear additional suggestions for work group consideration. I just want to note up here on the map, just so the representation of who the work group members are, and we had a number of state agencies. And then that shows sort of where we had the roadshow across the state, because we wanted to get feedback, hear additional suggestions for work group consideration. And the work group took these thoughts and considered them in their final recommendation to DEQ. Now, the work group had really good discussions regarding the realities of how communities are trying to tackle the problem and what will and will not work, including an acknowledgement of a strong culture of wood stove use, lack of staffing to implement programs, an easily accessible wood supply, and economic barriers to struggling communities. And so the recommendations provided to the legislature focus on what is needed to be successful in tackling the wood smoke issue and helping these communities. Overall, these recommendations enhance state and local partnerships focused on reducing health effects of wood smoke and to remove potential regulatory barriers to economic development that could be caused by a federal non-attainment designation in local communities. And so to achieve the goal of helping Oregon communities reduce wood smoke, the report highlights 3 priority recommendations for legislative consideration. So the first key recommendation is to increase community funding. And so locally run wood smoke reduction programs are critical to maintaining or achieving clean air, and at least part-time programs are required for some former non-attainment communities under the federally approved clean air plans. And so local communities understand the challenges of their area and can craft effective wood smoke reduction programs that include wood stove curtailment, education and outreach messages, and specifically tailored for their residents. It also includes current state funding of approximately $170,000 per biennium only covers part of the cost to implement minimal wood smoke reduction programs in 7 communities. By increasing the state funding for local wood smoke reduction by a range of $550,000 to $700,000 per biennium, each community could then employ a full or part-time dedicated staff person to implement various programs that I mentioned earlier, including a wood stove curtailment program, expanding education outreach efforts, and also administering wood stove change-out programs. And increased funding could also potentially expand the number of communities that could receive funding to conduct the wood smoke reduction efforts. So locally implemented community programs are one of the most effective ways to reduce wood smoke in an area. And without their partnership and involvement, many communities will be at continued risk or potentially in danger of violating the federal air quality standard. Increased funding will allow these areas to fully address or enhance their ability to address wood smoke. Mm-hmm. So another key recommendation is including sustained funding for wood stove changeouts. Now, as Representative Kenny Garin mentioned earlier, there are approximately 150,000 uncertified stoves in the state, and these old stoves are a reason for why areas are at risk of violating the health standards. Oregon has had a long and successful history of replacing wood stoves in certain communities, but money is sporadic and limited to just one-time-only grants. Sustained funding is the only way to ensure that communities have a consistent, reliable source of funding to do changeouts. And the recommendations focus on doing these replacements to be able to lower PM levels within the next 5 to 10 years, particularly in critical airsheds where air quality is concerned. We can't afford to wait and hope a grant will come along, and we need to put a funding source in place now that communities can rely upon. So the recommendations include an allocation in the range of $3 to $5 million per biennium, which could target the high-risk communities and would support a meaningful level of effort to replace dirty old wood stoves. And so this chart here, it's a little busy, but it kind of provides a rough estimate of the number of stoves that can be replaced by funding amount and the estimated reductions in air pollutants. And so I just wanted to note there are a lot of variables that can affect these numbers. For example, it depends on whether the change-up program covers the full replacement cost of the device, which would be sort of the top line for each, dollar amount part, or provides only a partial rebate covering part of the cost, which would be the bottom estimate. So you can see there's really quite a bit of variability with that. And so from past change-out programs, many communities offer a combination of the two, but the allocation between the full rebates and the partial rebates varies based on the makeup of the community. So, for example, in an area maybe like Oak Ridge or Lakeview, there may be a greater need for full replacement rebates just due to economic needs, as opposed to other areas of the state where there may be more of an even distribution between partial and full rebates. Also, the type of device being replaced has an effect on the emissions reduction and the overall cost of how many devices can be replaced. For example, a pellet stove provides greater emissions reduction than a certified wood stove, and a gas or electric heating device provides even more reduction. But the cost for replacing these devices is subsequently higher than a certified wood stove. Another factor is the amount provided for the partial rebate. Different communities may offer different incentive amounts based on the needs and interests of the residents. And all these variables affect the overall cost of a change-out program and how many stoves can be replaced. So each community could design the change-out to fit their needs and present a change-out implementation proposal. And then community could provide a range of options from offering incentives to partial rebates to full cost replacements, particularly if there are many low-income residents. Other program components can include any ongoing or planned programs to supplement a change-out effort, such as education and outreach or weatherization, and a commitment of in-kind resources or matching funds, and also a demonstration of how the community will measure air quality improvements. So DEQ's experience to date with wood stove changeouts shows that this is a multi-year effort requiring sustained funding, and the ongoing funding provides a level of continuity for communities to know that there will be a multi-year funding source to do changeouts and be part of the larger effort within the community to address wood smoke. So the last key recommendation is to increase education and outreach across the state on the health effects of excessive wood smoke. Increasing awareness of the wood smoke problem is an essential component to implementing effective wood smoke reduction programs, because basically if residents don't understand why wood smoke reducing wood smoke is important, the needed or existing locally based reduction programs could fail or be severely hindered. And to date, limited state and local resources have resulted in limited outreach. And with an additional staff person and technology support, the state could develop a suite of tools and programs that local communities and residents could use to address their individual outreach and education needs. So in conclusion, here's a link to the final Wood Smoke report. And I just want to say that Oregon has had a long history of addressing wood smoke in the state, and attaining federal air quality standards would not be possible without the state and local partnerships to tackle the wood smoke program. DEQ and local communities continue to work together to develop community plans and strategies to reduce wood smoke levels. And these recommendations build upon the past successes and of state and local efforts and provide a targeted, coordinated approach to ramp up the state-local effort to reduce wood stove smoke. And I'd be happy to take any questions you might have.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Any questions, committee members? Representative Polvey.
Thanks. I know that we've had a lot of programs in the past, replacement programs and other various programs trying to address wood stoves specifically. And just wondering how those have actually done, or is it just a matter that we haven't really had the revenues or resources to carry these programs out, or they just haven't been successful strategies in the past?
Mr. Chair, Representative Polvey, we've had a number of very successful wood smoke programs in the past. For example, we've been doing a lot of changeouts in the Klamath Falls and Lakeview area, and we've replaced well over 400, 500 stoves, and we're continuing to see the levels of PM go down, and actually Klamath Falls is now meeting the standard. So we can certainly point to that success. Back in 2009, we received a $2 million grant, a federal grant, and we were able to replace almost 700 stoves, and that equated to almost 30 tons of PM reduction. So we can definitely see the impact. The problem is we've got 150,000 uncertified stoves out there, so it's a lot of stoves to replace, and it's expensive to do so. But by chipping away at this and having the consistent funding source, we'll be able to get all those old stoves out, replace them with cleaner burning devices, getting more efficient devices in people's homes, and making sure that they breathe cleaner air.
And if I might add, Chair Helm, Representative Holvey, I think Rachel's correct. We've had a number of successes, and for instance, in Klamath Falls. But I also would say we've seen data in the last couple of years that suggests there's additional communities that may be on the verge of reaching non-attainment. So that's that federal designation that you're not meeting the federal air standards. And that is an issue certainly in terms of public health for the people who are in those communities and breathe that air. But it's also an issue for businesses that are in those communities or might want to relocate to that area, and we have heard from those businesses, and there was testimony provided to the House Bill 3068 work group that kind of designation can make the modeling that the company has to go through to get the permits much more difficult, much more expensive, and can even be from the point of view of economic development and advertising your community to other businesses outside of Oregon or maybe even in Oregon, it can be a strike against you, a mark against the community. So I think what we would say is there have certainly been some successes, but sustained funding may help us prevent communities from moving into that designation and will certainly help those communities that already have it. So, you know, it could be an opportunity to really do some good for public health as well as economic development.
So I guess I'm hearing you say it's just a matter that we haven't put enough resources into these programs to really change the problem.
Yeah. Very good. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the information. What is it? You said you spent about $2 million. You had a $2 million grant and were able to replace roughly 700 wood stoves. What's the average price of one of the cleaner wood stoves that you're using to replace?
So, Chair Helm, Representative Smith, a cleaner burning wood stove can range between $1,000 to $3,000. But what also needs to be taken into account is doing any upgrades, because you want to make sure that when you put in a new stove, it's up to code, and you want to make sure that it's installed properly. And so when we say it costs between $3,000 to $5,000, you may end up getting a $1,000 stove, but it turns out the installation costs can be equal to or more than the actual cost of the stove, because we don't want people to be able to just get a stove but then find out that they have to put in another $2,000 that they didn't expect to make sure that it's installed properly.
No, I understand. I mean, the math is roughly 2,800 a stove, so mm-hmm. I'm sure there was it swung both ways, right, with the replacement. And okay, thank you.
Any further questions, Representative Powers?
I was looking at the report, and it looks like local governments put in, for them, a good chunk of their own money to help implement this program. Do you have a sense of whether they're going to be able to continue to help fund this and that work, especially for some of these more rural communities?
So, Chair Helm, Representative Power, yes, a lot of the communities do put in a lot of their money. This goes not just to change out, it's more sort of the overall effort to reduce wood smoke. So this deals with in-kind resources, such as a local staff person to help do the wood stove curtailment calls or go out to the community doing the education and outreach. We do provide local community funding to them to help them with this effort, but it is getting more difficult because we don't have a lot of money to give to many communities, and there are more communities out there that do need our assistance. So that is, you know, one of the key recommendations that we did have in the report is increasing local community funding, because we recognize that they are at the forefront and they are the ones who are able to most effectively reach out and sort of address the wood smoke issue.
And if I might add, Chair Helm, Representative Power, in House Bill 2725, if you look at that bill, it was drafted in a way for when DEQ looks at applications and from local programs, there's a scaling that's given there in the bill so that smaller communities can give more of their local match through in-kind contribution as opposed to actual dollars. And so I think that was an attempt by Representative Kindergaard to recognize the differences in communities and try to make it such that, you know, everybody has a shot at the money.
Thanks.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate it. Palmer, I wonder, since we're talking about non-attainment, could you maybe just give us a little more in-depth explanation of what that means for a community to be determined to be in a non-attainment status regarding moving forward with industry, business, commerce, all that kind of stuff. I think that's really helpful, because that really is kind of the impetus. I think that we have health, certainly we're concerned about 2.5 certainly, but the practical effect is it could have a serious economic impact on parts of our state as well.
Absolutely. Chair Helm, Vice Chair Johnson, absolutely. I'll take up that question, and Rachel can feel free to correct me if I say anything wrong. The federal rules require that we get 3 years' worth of monitoring data from a community. And if the average of those 3 years tells us that the community is over the standard, and mostly what I'm going to talk about is a daily standard for PM 2.5, as you indicated. And so this is, as Rachel was indicating, a very fine level of particulate, basically the uncombustible material that comes out of wood stove. It also comes out of diesel exhaust, so it's not just limited to wood stoves. If a community has that average of the three-year data and it is over that 35 micrograms per cubic meter squared, so volume of air, then now EPA is at a point where they can designate the community as non-attainment. And to Representative Johnson's questions, what that can do for a facility that wants to expand in a community that has received that designation, or a facility that might want to come and relocate, is they have to demonstrate that their admissions in no way contribute to worsening that problem. Mm-hmm. And actually, it makes sense in terms of protecting public health that they wouldn't do anything to add to that problem. But there's also kind of a sort of a level of unfairness to the business at the same time, because that standard is a community standard. It accounts for all the sources that are non-industrial, so including the background wood smoke and other things like that. And so if an industry is only going to add a very small amount, but it takes the air over that standard or keeps it over that standard, then they have to demonstrate through permitting that they either offset that mm-hmm. or they stay below that standard. So in a sense, industry carries then a little bit more of the responsibility for all of those other inputs of a fine particulate. So I think from the department's point of view, certainly our primary motivation is public health, but we see this dynamic playing out for communities around the permitting process, and it sort of suggests that we need to do more to clean up the background sources of fine particulate.
And Chair Helm, Representative Johnson, I also just want to follow up really quickly. Under the federal requirements, it also does require any new or expanding industry. So if there's an industry that's already there looking to expand or any new industry that wants to come in, they are required to put on the most stringent controls for that pollutant, whether or not they're a key pollutant, key emitter or not. So it's really, it requires a lot of costly controls, essentially, for the industry.
This is for you, Rachel, I think, but as you talked about the last slide, we were talking about increasing education and so forth amongst the general population, but I guess I would take it beyond wood stoves into all kinds of, let's just look at fireplaces and so forth, too, mm-hmm. and we know in the metro area, there's a lot of homes that have just your fireplace that was there from 1930 or 40, whatever. But there also, I think, as a state, we still have some incentives, I think, for natural gas appliances, right, that can encourage folks to maybe change mm-hmm. out a fireplace and put in a gas or propane mm-hmm. insert and so forth. So I'm just wondering, in DEQ's education type, work that you're going to be doing, I wonder if that might also be something where you might partner with Northwest Natural or one of our other folks and say, not only is it going to be, less messy, when you get home you can flip the switch instead of having to light the fire and so forth, but also from the public health standpoint, there could be benefits to some of these neighborhoods, especially in the urban area where I think you have a preponderance of fireplaces that are, they're convenient, thing to have, but if people knew that there was a public health benefit to that transition as well, it might be a, win-win for everybody. So I just would throw that out there, and I don't know if you've encountered that as you try to work through this, especially in some of the urban areas.
Chair Helm, Representative Johnson, yes, we certainly do try and educate folks, as to just sort of the range of cleaner burning options, know, in areas where there is natural gas. We certainly say, offer them that suggestion and show how much cleaner burning it is. So it is certainly part of the education outreach efforts. With changeouts, of course, we want to give people the choice because we don't want them to put in a device that they ultimately don't really like. So we a lot of communities like the flexibility of giving them a choice of a stove or a pellet sure. stove or a natural gas device, but we do try and encourage them to the cleanest burning device as possible.
And if I might add, I think, Representative Johnson, you bring up an excellent point. It would be probably better to describe this wood smoke report as not just a wood stove replacement report or anything like that. It is about finding better home heating options or business heating options for folks. And so certainly in some areas, natural gas will be readily available, and that hookup can be made. There'll be other places where the folks who live there are dependent on cordwood to keep their houses. And so we certainly want to recognize that. And it's just about helping them either have better, drier wood to burn or better stoves, cleaner stoves.
Further questions?
Yeah. Representative Rich.
Thank you for coming. I need a little bit of help. So can you help me quantify the benefit of your report or the recommendations you're making? I understand the cost, $3 to $5 million per biennium. I understand the quantity of wood stoves or that we can replace with that money. But I understand that will help us meet the EPA standards of 2.5. But I want to know, do we have a real measure of how people live better lives? Do we have fewer cancer patients? Do we have less trips to the ER because of respiratory problems? Is there any kind of real measure in standard and quality of living, or are we just trying to get the 2.5 and that's all we're concerned about?
So, Chair Helm, Representative Reschke, yes, EPA in developing the PM2.5 standard has to go through a lot of health effects information and looking at the economic benefit of sort of, what's the cost of all of this? How many hospital visits are averted? How many sick days are averted through this? And so we can certainly get you that information because EPA has gone through a whole list of health studies, and so it's been extensively researched about the benefits yeah. of making sure that we reduce wood smoke and PM2.5 levels.
That would be great for me to get my head around mm-hmm. the benefit side of it. Because I'm a clean air guy. I like clean air, but we have a finite amount of money, and so you want to spend it wisely, so I want to understand the real benefit here, not just that we're meeting a federal standard. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Gotcha. Any further questions?
Well, we'll have
Representative Barnhart's got the final question, and we're going to move on to our...
I apologize, Mr. Chair. I look at this report. It looks like the biggest number in your system there was about 5,000 replacement. You said there are 150,000 stoves. I mean, that's fewer than 5,000, 4,100. There's something in the neighborhood of 150,000 stoves. I'm doing a little quick arithmetic. It looks like it's going to take more than 30 years to replace those using this approach. Personally, I think it would be really helpful if we could broaden our perspective and see if we can find some other way of doing this. When I was on a committee, I don't remember which one, at least a decade ago, maybe longer, this was then a new idea. And of course, there may not be anything that works better, that has better short-term outcomes. But boy, it sure would be nice if there was a way of getting there. And that's a comment rather than a question, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, thank you for both of you for coming today. We appreciate the information and the work behind it.
Thanks.
At this time, I'm going to reopen the public hearing on HB 2124 and HB 2725. And I'd like to first invite up Mayor Jim Coey and Tracy. Come on up.
I think Chris is what it looks like. Chris Hagerbaumer.
And Chris Hagerbaumer. Chris, you here?
Yeah.
I'm sort of, in terms of testimony, folks, today, when you come up, just let me know if you're testifying in general or whether there's a specific bill, which one of the bills you're testifying for. And if you can just remember to give us your name for our record so we know who's talking. And go right ahead, Mr. Mayor. And by the way, thank you very much for traveling today to help us with this issue. I know that your community has done a lot of work here from a lot of different perspectives, and I'm really anxious for the committee to hear your wisdom on this.
Thank you.
It's going to let me jump in. All right. Chair Helm, members of the committee, for the record, Tracy Breton, League of Oregon Cities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of both House Bill 2124 and 2725. Though I think that we have a stronger interest in taking a look at House Bill 2725 and the opportunities that that will hopefully present to some of our communities that have been facing these challenges for some time now or who are looking at the potential of facing these challenges in the future. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. As you've heard, I have a mayor here today who has had a lot more experience with this issue. What I will briefly say is that we would advocate for additional funding resources, which is, I'm sure, no surprise, but also want to make sure that there's ample flexibility within the program to ensure that local communities are able to analyze what is going on in their communities. They are very close to these issues, and many of them have very extensive experience at the local level, and we want to make sure that any of the solutions that they see as a best fit for their communities are workable under any program that we look to fund. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Good afternoon, Chair Helm and members of the committee. My name is Jim Coy. I'm the mayor of Oak Ridge, the mountain biking capital of the Northwest, as many of you may know. And thank you for your comments. It's a project that I never thought I would know as much as I do about. And I do have some good news in this, in that we've been in non-attainment for 10 years since this started being measured in 06.
Yeah.
We've been on the verge of serious non-attainment for the last 2 years. As of December 31st, we are out of non-attainment with a lot of smoke and mirrors and very little money. It's been a long time. We created a work group in the local area. With some great partners, El Rapa, Lane Electric, Forest Service, St. Vince DePaul, HAXA, I think there's a few others in there, staff, Willamette Forest Collaborative, and we've come up with a pilot program that I think is the better solution that you asked about, Representative Barnhart. It's a multifaceted approach. We've come out of non-attainment with no changeouts. Basically, what we've done is with a very little money, and like I said, a lot of hard work, and we've been able to hire a half-time code enforcement officer and has been focusing during burn seasons on people and their burning. We've also been able to receive from some other partners like Roseburg Lumber and Seneca Lumber some wood that was dry and seasoned, so we've been able to sell that at a discounted rate for those that are seniors or disabled or are part of our exemption program, which is for those people that are sole source heat. Wood is their only source. We've been able to give them dry seasoned firewood. This year we just did 40 cords at $125 a cord. And retail was, I think, $175. As many of you know, we're surrounded by national forest, one of the few cities that is. So there's an ample supply of wood, but if people are not educated well enough, even though they've been burning it for decades, compliant stoves aren't always beneficial if you don't burn properly. So by supplying the dry wood, it has helped bring us out of here. And code enforcement, we created a diversion program through the courts. There's fines. We found that you have to put a stick behind it, too. You know, I mean, small rural communities in Oregon, you know, many of you know about these. They can be kind of stiff in the neck when it comes to things. You have before you this, it's a summary. I won't go through all of it. We have spoken with Senator Brzezinski, who is a co-author of this as well, and he's agreed to amend this for the work group which we were part of. And thank you for creating that. It was, I think, a good group, from all over parts of the state. And page 42 of that report, you'll see the recommendation of the group, which says they would like to see an emergency fund of $1 million for the city of Oak Ridge to implement this pilot program. I believe the program will solve the problem. You know, changing out wood stoves, like I said, we've come out of it in 2 years, and we didn't change any stoves. The grant back in 2009, we've replaced over 50 stoves. There's very little numbers. Now, that's for our particular area. Klamath Falls maybe being a little more open, or some of these other areas, they may have numbers that do justify it, but we have not seen that. And I think that's about all I have to say. Any questions, I guess?
We'll go to the end of the panel, okay. And then, so thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Helm, and members of the committee, and thank you to Representative Johnson for getting this all started a couple of sessions ago. So I served as Chris Hagerbaumer with Oregon Environmental Council, and I served on this interim committee, just a tremendous group of people, again, from all over the state, who really took the issue seriously. That work group really delved deeply into the problems, the economic needs of the communities, the potential solutions, how biomass fits in, and a lot of issues. And I looked back at the public comments, and across the board, the public that we heard from was very concerned about how wood smoke impacts their health. I was super impressed by what's happened around the state, the local efforts, for example, described by the mayor. In Pendleton, I thought I'd just share a few things that Pendleton did. They started a wood stove replacement program in 2000, and they surveyed their residents and found that there were about 800 uncertified wood stoves. A third of the folks that responded to that survey had experienced health problems themselves from the wood smoke. And they used a combination of grants from HUD and EPA to work with residents. And they provided interest-free loans and replaced about 186 stoves to date. Those were replaced by natural gas stoves, wood stoves, pellet stoves, and electric stoves, mostly natural gas. They also started a program with Sunridge Middle School for seventh graders to really teach them about air pollution issues, and that's still going on. I look at that, though, and I say, well, gosh, they were able to place about a quarter of their stoves, and they still have more to go. And it is absolutely the case that an enforcement program can reduce the pollution on those bad air days when you have those inversions, but that doesn't mean that wood smoke still doesn't isn't impacting people's health on non-bad air days. So it is important over time to really change out to EPA certified or natural gas and other measures. So to that end, I think that these two bills in front of you are supported by our organization because they would help these local communities do what they need to do. There are, I think, policy options that would also move the needle a little bit faster. And so an example would be, could I think education is huge here. I think a lot of people don't actually understand. I mean, I grew up in homes with where we burned wonderful, wonderful fires. I love a nice fire. But I had no idea when I was a kid that this was dangerous to my health. My parents didn't understand that. And so we need a lot more education in the state. One way to educate would be if you bought a new home on that real estate agreement, there could be a disclosure of the health hazard of that fireplace in your home. We could register wood-burning devices so we actually understood how many uncertified stoves there are in the state. In fact, I also served on a Washington County work group related to this issue, and they just didn't know in the community how many folks had uncertified wood stoves or fireplaces. It was very, very hard to figure out. And another example is I don't think we should let the problem get worse. And here's my anecdote from my own neighborhood. A new restaurant opened up recently. My husband and I go in, and it was a wood-fired pizza was a main thing on the menu, right? A big, beautiful boiler or whatever you call it. And we didn't have the pizza. I'm sure it was delicious. But my question is that delicious pizza more important than that community's health? We're adding more pollution to the air. So, and I think that, again, probably the folks who put the restaurant in place don't even understand that that's a problem, and the city doesn't understand that it's a problem, so it allows that to be permitted. So I think a combination of education and incentives, and in some cases policy solutions, is needed to get our air cleaner. And I'll end there. Thank you so much.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for this panel? Representative Holby.
Thanks. I guess a question for the mayor. I, you know, being a longtime resident of Lane County, pretty familiar with our air quality issues in Lane County. And I know Oak Ridge has struggled for a lot of different reasons. You know, it's an economically depressed area, for one, and the topography, for two, really traps the air in that area. And there's been a lot of programs for a long time that I know that Oak Ridge has been really diligent about, and I'm just kind of curious. I mean, this bill's largely, you know, a replacement program, and you seem to indicate that I got to imagine that Oak Ridge has gone through a lot of replacement programs in the past and hasn't really been successful, so I'm sort of intrigued with your education, your stick, and, you know, helping provide a better fuel source as being something that actually worked. Do you have any other thoughts about what kind of programs, based on your experience, that would really help you?
Yes, I do. Mr. Chair and Representative Holby, in this pilot program that we created, the four main pieces of this are our Douglas heat pump. For those, we took the exemption households, which this year is 58 households, and figuring if we can put ductless heat pumps in them and give them an alternative source, because we know a lot of people these days, it's easier to get home and flick on a switch than it is to build a fire. Hopefully that changes some of that mentality and educates that way. We don't have an access to natural gas. It's just not available to us. We'd love to have it, but, you know, just bringing it up the mountain is not going to happen. The second part is compliant stoves as needed. Education, of course, is part of it. But weatherization, you put a new electric appliance in a house that leaks like a sieve, it's not going to work. They're not going to be warm. This past year, Lane Electric did change out 48 ductless heat pumps, installed them in homes. 18 of them were subsidized. The balance was not. The subsidies came from Bonneville Power Plant. So I think by doing those things, we're creating a healthier household. We're given an opportunity to have a healthier household. and with project coordination as part of this as well. Some of the other things we've done is when we've done the wood program, we've also had a one-on-one, about 15-minute one-on-one education about how to burn properly in these stoves. It's not the same as your grandma used to do. So it's given us an opportunity. I think over the last 2 years, we've sold 110 cords. Does that keep going? Possibly. You know, we have a lot of large thin projects coming up in the Middle Fork, and hopefully there'll be a continued source. But we have very little logging going on there, so you know, we don't know if that program will continue. I think there's other approaches as well. I mean, we've done this, and I think Merlin Huff and Mal Rapa can confirm this. This is about a 20 to 25 piece puzzle. Mm-hmm. That takes all those pieces. And I think by funding this work group or this pilot program, it allows us to create the data and the evidence that I think can be used statewide. I hope that answers your question.
It does. I appreciate your input.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any further questions? Very good. Thank you all for coming. And again, Mr. Mayor, thanks for traveling.
Thank you.
I'm going to call up next Alex Kyler, Merlin Huff, and Travis Mameson. We're not exactly running out of time here today, but what's not on the agenda that I'm going to add is to give Representative Johnson a little bit of time to discuss a legislative concept that he has ready, but it isn't quite through the clerk's office process. So I would like to have reserved maybe 10 minutes for him. So if we can all be concise, I'd appreciate it. Whoever wants to go first, please go right ahead.
Chair Helm and committee members, I appreciate this opportunity to talk to you. I'm Merlin Huff. I'm a director of Lane Regional Air Protection Agency, LRAPA, in Springfield, Oregon. And we've been involved with wood smoke strategies for quite a few years, had a chance to be involved with many key partners, stakeholders, including the city of Oak Ridge, as Mayor Covey outlined. This bill, we are very supportive of 2725. Supportive also of 2124, but 2725 is more comprehensive. It's more closely aligned with the recommendations of the wood smoke work group, of which we participated in a non-voting or ex officio capacity. This more comprehensive, it's not just the wood stove replacement, but it also recognizes the need for complementary programs like public education, firewood seasoning, weatherization, some of those things that Mayor Coey outlined. Just a quick history, it might be interesting for some of the audience. Perhaps you all know that the Oregon Legislature adopted the first wood stove certification program in the country back in 1983, and we would be in much worse shape right now trying to meet these progressively tightened, more protective federal air quality standards if it wasn't for that program. First program was here in 1983. A few years later, U.S. EPA recognized the need for a national program, and they adopted a program very closely modeled after Oregon's program. So that's certainly a testament to the foresight of the Oregon legislature. EPA then has tightened those standards, the most recent tightening. They haven't tightened them as many times, as frequently as they're technically required to under the Federal Clean Air Act, but back in 2015, the standards that we're operating under today, which makes a wood stove replacement program even more effective today than it would have been in the early years. So we're very supportive of this. I'm available for questions if I can help provide any insights, but I think your previous panel certainly did an excellent job of outlining the scope of the issues for you.
Go right ahead.
Chairman Helm, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Alex Kyler. I'm Lane County's Intergovernmental Relations Manager. We are in support of House Bill 2725. I did want to let the committee know that on January 10th, the Board of County Commissioners finalized an amendment to a local ordinance allowing, providing expanded authority to LRAPA for enforcement within the UGB of Oak Ridge. And so there had the City of Oak Ridge had come to the board to, as they were working on through this issue, and recognized that there was some disconnect between city residents and those in the UGB in terms of their ability to enforce, asked us to make that minor adjustment to our ordinance, and we were happy to do so. So it's sort of an example of a policy step that a local government can take to help alleviate the impacts. I did check Representative Reschke with our public health doctor, and we don't have that level of detail to know, for example, visits to doctors or emergency rooms from residents of Oak Ridge, but there is a significant amount of data related to those very, very small particulate matter and their health impacts. I think, Mr. Chair, we'd be interested in the bill if we could tweak it a little bit to recognize some of the other programs that the city, that the mayor outlined from Oak Ridge, where if some of these dollars could be utilized for things like assisting with the building of a woodshed for residents or other things that would help with the fuel source itself. So to me, it seems like there's a great base for a bill here, and perhaps if we can get our heads together and get an amendment to make it even better.
Good afternoon, Chair Helm, Vice Chairs Johnson and Powers. I'm Travis Mavison, the legislative assistant to Representative Greenlick. He's unfortunately in another committee right now, so I'm testifying on his behalf. Without trying to be too repetitive with what we've heard today, I'm speaking on House Bill 2124, but in speaking with Representative Greenlick in passing before healthcare, he just heard about Representative Kenny Geyer's bill and does look forward to working with her in trying to make sure this is a comprehensive discussion about wood smoke. But with the discussion around some of the pollutants like benzene and formaldehyde affecting the air and the crops in Oregon, as well as the health effects to increased heart attack, stroke, and asthma patients with the effects of wood smoke, but also, according to DEQ, up to 60% of the wood being burnt in uncertified wood smoke is actually could be wasted and drastically limiting their effectiveness to the consumer of those products. This bill attempts to provide a means for Oregonians to switch to more fuel efficient and less chemically harmful home heating ways. House Bill 2124 would create the rebate program for the removal of solid fuel burning devices that are not certified by the DEQ. All of the work that House Bill 2124 would do only adds to an incremental step to what we've been trying to work on in replacing and reducing the inefficient wood stoves in Oregon. In 1986, Oregon started the program to rate and certify wood stoves efficiency, and the program actually led the way to the EPA following suit. This would only just secure Oregon as being a leader within the wood smoke program and trying to reduce its effects on its citizens. So thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions for this panel, committee members? I'll just thank you for coming in on the issue of amendment. Please submit the request directly to our analyst, Beth Riley. And for the rest of the committee members and folks that might be contacting you about amendments, all amendments are going to go directly to Beth. And I'm going to adopt a policy that amendments are freely accepted, and we'll get them in the queue and consider them as they come in. So, but Beth is the gatekeeper there. Thanks again.
Thank you.
So I think we are at our final panel. Mary Thibodeau, Mary, Jen Baker, and Jim, come on up. Go right ahead, Mary. You can start it off.
Thank you, Chair Helm, and all the members of the committee for this opportunity to speak. My name is Mary Pivito. For the record, I'm the president of Neighbors for Clean Air. We're a grassroots air quality advocacy organization, and we support House Bill 2124 and HB 2725. We had several members, Neighbors for Clean Air had several members as well as partners who participated in the 22-member work group following this very closely. And in addition, I served on a City Club of Portland Air Quality Advocacy Committee from 2012 to 2014 following work that I did as a member of the Portland Air Toxic Solutions Advisory Committee. And it was from that committee work that I learned about the significant contribution that wood smoke makes to the quality of air in the Portland metro region, which I think was quite a surprise for many people, for it to be one of the highest concerns of air quality. Fine particulates in wood smoke, you know, 1/30th the size of a human hair, known as PM2.5, can cause cancer and aggravate respiratory illnesses. And this is a significant problem in the Portland metro area as well as the more rural and urban areas where I think wood heating is more associated with. We do know that new wood stoves are significantly more efficient and cleaner burning, as well as there are new fuels that could be used. And for example, this is a problem that does affect areas of high density residential where there's also industry. And this, as was already spoken to, the problem of attainment and maintaining federal compliance with federal standards is a significant issue. And Washington County recently addressed this with its wood smoke curtailment program. And I think that's an excellent example where these programs work. They saw a significant amount with an excellent execution of their program of adoption rate. They anticipated having up to 50 wood stove changeouts in the first year, and they had over 200 applications within the first couple of months, and they hope to get 700 by the end of their five-year program. Because of the success of that program, Multnomah County, we're working with Multnomah County on another program similar to the Washington County. So these programs do work. The combination of the grants and the rebates really do help reach the most impacted folks who really do rely on wood smoke for their home heating. So we support this. We also find coming into today, you know, it was unfortunate yesterday because of this did come as a recommendation from DEQ's work group and the work group that came, that it was unfortunate that DEQ was not able to put its wood smoke reduction into its final policy package. So we think it's unfortunate that the agency won't be able to fund in this area, and so it makes the funding that you can provide even more critical, I think, for this concern. So you all know, 2016, we saw an unprecedented call for work on air pollution. We think this is a really important piece to focus on, and we appreciate you, your consideration of this important program. Thank you.
Chair Helm, members of the committee, my name is Jen Baker on behalf of the Oregon Nurses Association. ONA is proud to represent over 14,000 nurses who work throughout our state in nearly every healthcare setting imaginable, from acute care facilities, school-based health centers, corrections, and of course, public health. And they, all of our nurses, regardless of the setting they work in, understand how important clean air is. I was surprised to learn that in Oregon, wood smoke is one of our largest sources of air toxins. The smoke produced from wood stoves and fireplace contain over 100 different chemical compounds, and breathing this air can have a number of very serious respiratory and cardiovascular health problems, especially for infants, children, pregnant women, elderly. Those are, you know, the folks most at risk for most health problems. And continued inhalation has actually been proven to worsen chronic diseases and, of course, drive up the cost of our overall healthcare system, and in many cases can even result in premature death. And I would be remiss if I did not piggyback on a lot of the comments that have been made here today about how disappointing it is that this is one of many programs this session that we will likely find ourselves in an opportunity or not having the opportunity to fund. That's why ONA is a continued proud partner of the A Better Oregon Coalition, working to make sure that we at some point reach a point where we no longer have to make these tough decisions. And for our members, that really means passing a revenue package that ensures we're no longer 50th in the nation in corporate tax so that we can invest in all of these upstream public health policies and help offset the cost of healthcare long term.
Chair Helm, committee members, for the record, Jim McCauley representing Washington County. I don't want to go in too much detail, so I'll just focus on brevity, but I think a lot of what's been said is important to the context as this bill moves forward in the process. We, of course, would support the package. You obviously have one as kind of an element for the revenue side as far as where it's housed. The other is the implementation piece. Our staff had a chance to participate in that wood stove or the wood smoke advisory group, so a lot of those recommendations the DEQ shared earlier are actually part of 2725, and that's great. We would also like to let folks know that we'll participate in an amendment process, because one of the elements that's important for us here is we're not in a non-attainment condition. However, back in 2014, we were basically one reading away from hitting a non-attainment designation, which would not have been good. And the reason is it's not it doesn't stick with, I'll say, Washington County or an individual neighborhood. It would potentially have been region-wide throughout the entire metro region, so affecting both economic development but also housing, transportation, and every other element that goes into or could possibly affect air quality elements throughout the region. So that motivated us as a county to work with our partners, form a strategy, and essentially implement a conversion program on our own and with our partners. So in August of 16, we initiated it. As Mary mentioned earlier, we set a goal of 50 households. We blew past that and are somewhere in the neighborhood of 240 right now, and I expect that by the summer of 17, we'll have probably 250 households with conversions. And based on our experience, on what we've got so far, there's probably a couple of pieces that you might find a little interesting. One is about a little less than half of those conversions, or about 44%, are with another wood stove or a high-efficiency wood stove. Part of this has to do with the neighborhoods that are being targeted for these conversions are typically low-income and typically don't have, I'll say, an income level that allows them to deal with a heating bill on a monthly basis, so they're able to qualify for free wood here or what they're able to get around the neighborhood, and that's why wood is still going to be a likely primary source for them. We also have had, I think, some success when you combine gas conversion, the electric piece, which is in the version of a ducted heat system or a non-ducted system, and then add propane into it. It's a little over a third of those households that are part of this system as we move forward. So we're still having a mix of a future wood stove use, but we're also having a significant share of those conversions taking place. And in our system within Washington County, the way it's structured is, again, we've got a partnership level that includes the businesses, and we've been able to get matching funds from some of those partners as well. And if you're in the 80% MFI, or that median family income level or below, 100% of your conversion is paid for. And then it becomes a sliding scale beyond that. And that, I think, is certainly attributed to the success that we've had. Our target long-term is in the neighborhood of 700 to 800 households out there. And part of what's in the OLIS system is an update, essentially, for December for us. And there's a mapping in mapping element in that included, and it's kind of interesting. If you were to overlay the actual hotspots in Washington County, you would see that the conversions and what we've been able to target over the last several months are actually taking place right in the exact area where they need to be, because our long-term goal out of this thing is to eliminate as much risk as we possibly can for ever getting a non-attainment designation in the future. So with that, happy to answer any questions.
Questions from committee members? Representative Johnson.
Thank you. Jim, could you talk about the funding for the work that you're doing? Maybe you touched on that, but could you explain that a little bit more, where that's coming from?
Sure.
Any private sector contribution?
Yeah, so right now, Washington County has put roughly $700,000 into it. And that basically helped set up the infrastructure. We have a physical staff person that is totally responsible for the implementation. Our partner, principal partner, is Intel, and they've made one contribution in the neighborhood of $250,000 and have another one coming up for this next year. So the combination of those two basically allow us to have this self-funding. So long-term, what we're looking for, obviously, is some kind of matching component, and that's where our amendment will be addressed.
Further questions? Can you follow up? Representative Holby.
Just a comment. I'm sitting here listening to this, and, I'm just reflecting on what Mayor Coey said and listening to this, that, our programs do need to be flexible. Mm-hmm. I introduced a bill in this committee in 2015 that would have given a rebate or subsidy for, fuels like pellets or, dry fuels so people can afford to, use the right fuel. I mean, one of the problems we've had with pellet stoves, and when you get into an area where people really can't afford to the ongoing cost of that kind of fuel, they just opt to not do it. And so, it seems like this program, if we're going to hopefully have some money for it, should be flexible enough for the local area to use that particular strategy. If it's, dry fuel that they need, they should be able to use the money for that. If it's a change out of wood stove to a pellet stove, I think I talked a lot with Bear Mountain and John Day, I believe, that was supporting this because they have a huge amount of biomass that they could turn into pellets if they could sell it. And the problem is a lot of people can't afford the ongoing cost of the pellets. So they're not going to shift. And so that's an integral piece to this issue is having that flexibility to have that kind of program available to them as well. So I think we need to think of it in terms of being flexible. So thanks.
Further comments? Questions?
Very good. Thank you again for joining us today. Appreciate your testimony. And as the last part of today's hearing, I'm going to give Representative Johnson a chance to explain his proposed legislative bill.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, have been working on the issue, obviously. I've been paying close attention to it from the formation of the work group and so forth last session, and I've had a bill and been working on an LC that we just dropped today that came about as a result of working closely again with Palmer and the folks at DEQ about the outcomes of the work group, the recommendations, say how can we move, what's a practical way to move forward. Obviously, if we had all the resources, financial resources that we wish we had at our disposal, it wouldn't be a big issue. But what can we do within the economic realities that we face? And it's LC 1949. It'll soon become House Bill something or other. But basically, it tries to just work within existing programs that DEQ has in place. And there is the Residential Solid Fuel Heating Air Quality Improvement Fund that exists within the department now. That is appropriated, it's able to appropriate and receive gifts or grants for the purposes of this section. But what I do in this bill is open up contributions or donations from any source, public or private, very much like what we just heard Washington County talk about here, for the purpose of reducing emission of air contaminants from solid fuel burning devices. So it expands the parameters of the fund itself and who can contribute to it and where that money can come from. And then again, my focus is really on non-attainment zones, because I think as we look across the state, particularly in Washington County and Oak Ridge, obviously you guys have felt this too, there either is or there will be really serious economic impacts to these regions if the situation doesn't get better or if it gets worse and so forth. So it simply allows a department to use this fund that would be able to be opened up and receive funds from multiple sources now to focus their efforts on redeploying these funds into either non-attainment zones or those zones that could become non-attainment zones. So it gives the department the discretion. So the idea is if you have somebody in Washington County, an Intel or whoever else, they could contribute to this fund and be assured that the resources are going to go back to that area or an area like that area for that purpose of helping them either get off the red list, if you will, or to make sure that they don't fall into that list and so forth. So much more simple. It works within the department. It keeps, you know, they have programs in place. They have personnel in place and so forth. It doesn't get into the weeds, I guess, well, or details as much as the bill that we have in front of us, Rep. Kenny Geyer's bill. So happy to work with folks. I think there's a pathway here. I think it'd be possible to choose a real practical pathway forward that we would have some real outcomes attached to it and to continue to make progress here. So I just offer my services to work either via amendments of whoever's bill, which is unlike, not unlike how 3068 came to be in the last session. If you recall, we had, I don't know, three or four wood smoke bills, and we boiled them all down into one. So that sounds like we may be in a similar pathway for this session as well, Mr. Chair. So
very good.
Thank you for your diligence or your allowing me to talk about that.
You bet. Any questions for Rep. Johnson about this bill?
And just as a disclaimer, I would say Palmer pretty much wrote the bill, so.
So all the credit and all the blame.
Exactly. So you know, you learn when you want an agency to work, you go to them and say, well, how can we make this thing practical and feasible for you all? So
very good. Thank you. And I think with that, our business today is finished. So I'm going to close the public hearing on HB 2124 and HB 2725. Thank you. 25. Thank you. HB 27.